Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Homeless children are one of the most vulnerable and neglected segments of our society. The National Center on Family Homelessness estimates that 2.5 million children are homeless. That is 1 in 30 kids. It is now common for most schools to have a homeless liaison. We hear the numbers, but who are these homeless children? How are cities and the federal government tackling this growing issue? The new documentary, The Home Stretch, focuses on the lives and challenges of three homeless teens braving Chicago's brutal winters while dealing with high school pressures and life alone on the streets. In the film, we meet Rocky, Casey, and Anthony. Rocky lives with his teacher, who noticed him circling the block with nowhere to go. Casey left home after suffering from depression due to her mother's harassment about her sexual orientation. Anthony spent 7 years in foster home until he was adopted and then abused. The Home Stretch premieres tonight on Independent Lens on PBS stations around the country. And today we are joined by the film's directors and producers, Ann DeMer and Kirsten Kelly. Ann DeMer is a Chicago-based award-winning playwright, director, professional video artist, and filmmaker. And Kirsten Kelly is an award-winning documentary film and theater director. And Ann DeMer and Kirsten Kelly join us from the Argo Studios in New York. Hi, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be on with you.
Well, Ann, I want to start off with you because these numbers are now getting a lot of attention. And I just did a quick search this morning for child homelessness. The Huffington Post has a piece, Child Homelessness in New York City Hit an All-Time High This Year. We're also seeing this in San Francisco. Before you tackled this issue and met these kids and started this project, did you know what a serious problem this is in the United States?
No, we really didn't. I think that one of the reasons why we wanted to make the film so badly was that when we encountered our first kind of young people who were going through this and started just poking a little bit into the statistics, we realized that this was an enormous crisis that no one was really talking about. And it became really important to us that we try to shine a light on a really enormous population that no one was really looking at.
Kirsten, what are your thoughts on this? Because the Children's Defense Fund, for example, the amazing organization in Washington, this is their issue. They focus on this. There are a lot of other organizations that focus on this. But the average person probably wouldn't guess that 1 in 30 kids in the United States is homeless.
Well, I think it's a very hidden problem. I mean, one of the things about children and youth is they often don't want to come forward or let people know their situations. They're either embarrassed or feel shameful, or they understand that there's such a negative stereotype or stigma that is, that comes up when someone thinks about homeless youth. So it's very hidden. And I think one of the things we were really struck by in our early research was how much schools, teachers, counselors, and principals were on the front lines of this crisis. Mm-hmm. They were often the first people that could respond and could see the signs of a kid who is in crisis.
Well, that's what really struck me about Rocky. He lives with his teacher who noticed him circling the block with nowhere to go. And, you know, in the last couple of years, there's been this war on teachers, in their words. Yet you rarely hear about these teachers who feed these kids, in some cases house these kids, in Rocky's case.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the degree to which our public school teachers are invested in their classrooms is extraordinary. And you put the nail on the head. We have been involved in this war on teachers that is really missing so much of what the work that they do is. You know, if you're a teacher and you have a child in crisis in your classroom, that child in crisis needs attention. There's no way around it. There's no way to avoid the issue. And so what we found is that so many teachers and so many, like the staff in the principal's office, they are donating time and money and resources to supporting these young people, very much out of their own pockets. So that was really what we saw.
And Kirsten, also, it's very common for schools to now have homeless liaisons. And we're going to hear a clip in just a couple of minutes, but we do meet a homeless liaison, Pat Scott, Prosser Career Academy High School in Chicago. And she deals with homeless kids. She gives them bus tickets. She makes sure they're fed. But this is common across the country, right?
Yeah, it's actually a federal mandate. The McKinney-Vento Act requires that each and every school district in our country has a homeless liaison. Now, the problem, especially in, urban areas and often in rural as well, you know, it's gotten so pervasive that often these homeless liaisons need to be in every single school.
So why did you both choose Chicago? Again, The Home Stretch, the new documentary, airs tonight on PBS, and it focuses on the lives and challenges of Rocky, Casey, and Anthony, who brave Chicago's brutal winters while also dealing with everyday high school pressures and then life alone on the streets. And why did you choose Chicago?
Well, I think, you know, as documentarians, you really have to tell the story that opens itself to you. And Kirsten was working on a terrific program with the Chicago Shakespeare Theater and Chicago Public Schools called CPS Shakespeare, and met a young man and introduced him to me, who was the antithesis of that stereotype of homeless youth. She had been working with him for a while, and it was blown away that he was going through these situations every night. And so we, you know, because of her connections with the Chicago Public Schools, we had access to the school system and to teachers. And that was kind of where we started our journey. Also, Chicago is a little bit unique because the Chicago Public Schools were actually sued back in 1995 by the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless because they needed to do a better job of educating their homeless students. And so they do have a homeless liaison in every single school. And they have been addressing the crisis more intensely for quite some time. So it was a good center for us to take a lens and look at this problem nationally.
And according to your film, there are 2,000 to 3,000 homeless youth on the streets of Chicago every night. There are more than 22,000 students registered as homeless with the Chicago Public Schools. They're officially known as students in temporary living situations. Kirsten, we just covered the Chicago mayoral race on Friday. Was this issue raised in that mayoral race?
I don't know about that. I know that several years ago, Mayor Emanuel did rededicate some funding towards homelessness, and specifically for the first time ever had added youth homelessness specifically as a separate funding line. So that was a positive thing that happened within the city. Now I know that with budget cuts, it's really been fluctuating back and forth, and it nowhere near is where it needs to be. Deal with the crisis numbers where they're at in Chicago.
And I just would add that the Governor Rauner just did his budget proposal for the 2016 school year and cut the budget for homeless youth services by more than 50%. So this is really a problem. We have this huge crisis in many, many, many cities across the country. I mean, I would say it touches every community in America. And we are still kind of finding funds to support these young people is really challenging.
I actually have some friends who work in a very low-income area in Sacramento, and they said that for the first time ever, they are now seeing former students pushing shopping carts in the Sacramento area. They've never seen this before. This is brand new. So why, I mean, this is a huge question, but why is it? Why are we seeing such a rise? Because the National Center on Family Homelessness says about 1 in 30 kids is homeless, and the numbers just keep going up every single year. You spoke to so many amazing people on the front lines. And what did they tell you? How do they explain why these numbers keep going up?
You know, I think that there's two really distinct issues that we heard over and over. I mean, one is just to remember that homelessness is largely a poverty issue, and we really have the lower levels of our economy have not recovered from the economic crisis of a number of years ago. So that's just to put that on the table. We focused our film primarily on unaccompanied youth, which is a very unique, it's a very specific portion of that homeless population. And young people become homeless on their own essentially because the family structure breaks apart in some way. There are many, many different feeder issues into youth homelessness. You know, as you mentioned, you know, sometimes it's young people have difficulty with their sexual orientation and have family tension that forces them out of the home. Foster care and the foster care system is a huge feeder into youth homelessness. There are juvenile justice issues. There are immigration issues. There's very often, you know, when we think about young people who, quote unquote, run away from home, we forget what they are running away from. And very often they are escaping abuse and neglect in the home. So there's many, many different issues that feed into it. And I think that, you know, as we said before, the what we do know is that we have a chance to meet almost every young person in crisis through our public school system. And if we can support the schools to support this population, it's a really huge first step. And then support the amazing organizations that are working on the ground.
Ann DeMayer is a Chicago-based award-winning playwright, director, and filmmaker. Kirsten Kelly is an award-winning documentary film and theater director. And Ann and Kirsten are directors and producers of the new documentary, The Home Stretch. It debuts tonight on PBS, focuses on the lives and challenges of three homeless teens. And why don't we play a clip from Home Stretch? In this clip, we will meet Casey, Rocky, and Anthony, and you will also hear the voice of Pat Scott. She's the homeless liaison at Prosser Career at Academy High School in Chicago.
It was because of the way that I am that my mother, you know, like, got rid of me. Because, you know, I'm a lesbian. Like, the first 2 weeks, I was sleeping on the street, literally, like in a park or a police station.
Immigration. They were looking for my dad. He had to settle down by himself somewhere else. And I had to settle down by myself in a different place.
I've been homeless for a while now, since I've been like 14. Going through several foster homes, you know, DCFS. Was some abuse, you know, some sexual, some mental. You lose faith and you lose hope. And sometimes we go down the wrong path and we never get to see the light.
Six freshmen, eight sophomores, four juniors, and 11 seniors. Each name represents a story, and it represents a person who's going to be awesome someday. So, that's the list.
Is there anybody who has
anything? And that is a clip from The Home Stretch, a new documentary that airs tonight on PBS. You can watch the trailer and find out when it's airing in your area at yourcallradio.org. The film focuses on the lives and challenges of three homeless teens, Casey, Rocky, and Anthony. In that clip, you also heard Pat Scott, the homeless liaison at Prosser Career Academy High School in Chicago. These teens are braving Chicago's brutal, brutal winters while also dealing with high school pressures and life alone on the streets. And today, I am speaking with the directors and producers of The Home Stretch. Ann DeMayer is a Chicago-based award-winning director and filmmaker. Kirsten Kelly is an award-winning documentary film and theater director. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Were you aware, or are you aware, that 1 in 30 children are now homeless? It is now common for most kids or most schools to have a homeless liaison. And as many people in the film say, these kids are very skilled at hiding what is wrong with them. And oftentimes, it's the teachers, it's the counselors, it's the people that they interact with at school that realize something's not right. Rocky is just walking around. There's nowhere to go. What is going on with him? So it's usually the educators that are finding out that these kids are homeless and then are hooking them up with services if there are services available. If you work with homeless children or youth, we'd love to hear from you. If you're an educator, what are you seeing in your school? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What is it like in your area? This problem is just getting worse by the year. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Kirsten, what's also really remarkable about this film is, in addition to putting a face on these numbers, you get very intimate access into the lives of these children. And that's what's often missing when you read these reports and sometimes even read the news articles about what's happening here. In this film, you see the dynamics between these kids and their parents. You see what their family lives are like. How did you get that access?
Well, we really, from the beginning, wanted to commit to telling the story over a long period of time. We wanted to spend time with these kids, both on and off camera. And, you know, we knew kind of going in, and we were guided by a lot of really smart, wonderful, caring counselors who said, you know, these kids have been betrayed by so many adults in their lives to where that they found themselves in these crisis situations, that we in no way wanted to exploit that. And we always wanted the process to be empowering for anybody, any young person who was working with us. So we took a lot of time. We spent a ton of time with over 12 kids on a journey. And it just, you know, kind of organically happened that Casey, Rocky, and Anthony had kind of spent the most time with us and had kind of the fullest journeys that we could weave together into a film. So it was really time and trust and faith and letting them have agency over their own story and their own journey.
Well, we have a caller on the line. Let's hear from Jennifer in San Francisco. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much for covering this issue.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so I was just calling. We've been looking a lot at the homeless children issue in San Francisco, and what we're finding is that while the other populations are remaining relatively stable, there's over 3,000 children in San Francisco. There's about 2,300 in San Francisco Unified Public Schools. It's a lot, but I just wanted to put the point out there that we can actually solve this issue, and it's not that difficult. It just takes some political will, and we actually are working on a report right now that lays out a roadmap on how to end homelessness for all the children in San Francisco within 5 years.
Is this Jenny Friedenbach with the Coalition on Homelessness?
It is.
Oh, hi, Jenny. Well, thanks so much for calling in. So tell us a little bit more about what we are facing here in San Francisco. And I'm sure, Anne and Kirsten, you've heard about this. I mean, you're dealing with this in New York and in Brooklyn. But housing is so expensive now in San Francisco. So many people are getting pushed out, losing their homes. And, you know, the issue of homelessness is also really getting worse in San Francisco. Jenny, what are we seeing? What's changed in the last couple of years?
Well, we've had a huge amount of displacement, as you mentioned, and so folks are losing their homes, so rents are skyrocketing. It's really a lot more difficult for folks once they're homeless to get off the streets now, because the more informal housing arrangements, the, you know, kind of shared housing. I mean, all of this stuff is just getting tighter and tighter, and so the options for people moving out are so much tighter. And so folks are really struggling, and they're staying homeless for a long period of time. Our wait list for family shelters, intact families, and of course this movie's talking about, you know, youth who are out on their own, but it's about 6 months for intact families. We have the last homeless count, they focused on homeless youth for the first time, and we have, you know, only a small portion of housing available for the large numbers that were identified in that count. And so pretty much everywhere, any different way we look at it, regardless of what numbers we're looking at, San Francisco Unified or Request for Shelter, it's skyrocketing. It's gone up for the Request for Shelters. It's gone up 194% since 2007.
Wow.
So it's really, really alarming. And people are staying homeless for a long period of time. So the impact then on children as they are homeless for a longer period of time is a lot worse. You know, if you know, there's some things that can happen, you know, domestic violence or, you know, a whole lot of stuff. So we're going to have people lose their housing, but our system is not responding. It's not quickly getting people back into housing. It's leaving people stuck in this crisis situation. And then you see these negative impacts on the kids that stay with them for a lifetime. And it's not necessary. We don't need to do it. You know, we've invested very little in children that are homeless in San Francisco. We focused a lot on single adults. Only 7% of our housing has gone towards families with kids, a very small percentage going towards homeless youth that are unaccompanied. And we have all these affordable housing buildings coming in place over the next couple of years that don't have one unit that would be turned over to homeless families. So it's really, or homeless people in general. So it's really frustrating. Mm.
Well, Jenny, thank you so much for calling in. That is Jennifer Friedenbach with the Coalition on Homelessness here in San Francisco. And wow, we've seen a 194% increase in need since 2007. And Kirsten, you and Anne focused on the CRIB, which is in Chicago. It's a night ministry, an emergency overnight youth shelter. And you've got video of the kids outside. They have to take part in a lottery to get a bed. On average, they turn away about 15 young people every night in Chicago.
That's correct. Yeah, it's a pretty dramatic situation every night. There's just not enough beds. And this place, the CRIB, has really been built from the need from the youth themselves. And they found, you know, they find that this place gives them a sense of community, a sense of friendship, and they make their own families out of that place. So it becomes this very important kind of foundation for them. And, you know, if they have to turn away people every night, that becomes really chaotic. And where do those kids go? They're left on the streets and they're often left to, you know, get in dangerous situations. So it really was a special place, but it was also a place with a lot of heartbreak. And while we were filming, they lost their funding. Their funding ran out from the city, and they had to close their doors while we were filming. And that was, you know, that was just devastating to the entire community. And, you know, it was a place where it you know, every night these kids would come and gather and socialize and hope for a bed. But it wasn't a permanent place. I mean, the youth, they need those emergency shelters, but then they also need, you know, transitional homes, mm-hmm. where they can come together and be supported while they're learning, you know, about education and vocation and recreation and dealing with the trauma that they've had in their lives so that they can make positive steps forward. I mean, each and every one of those kids, they want to build a better future. They really want to be in a place where they can make positive next steps. We were surprised constantly by, you know, the kids who fought with tooth and nail to stay in school, even though they were faced with these really chaotic situations. And so that was the story that we wanted to focus on in the film and kind of break that negative stereotype of, you know, the kids sleeping under the bridge and it's maybe their fault. And, you know, we really wanted to focus on to tell this different story that was more like the 98% of people that we really saw going through this.
And what's also striking about the CRIB, it first opened in January 2011 as a four-month pilot program. At the time, it was the only overnight shelter for kids in Chicago ages 18 to 24. And again, there are less than 300 shelter beds for youth in Chicago, while as many as 2,000 young people experience homelessness every night. So given that reality, why did the city want to cut the funding for the CRIB?
Well, the funding basically ran out. They had proposed that they would be able to operate year-round, and they didn't get that funding through. They have since been able to reopen, and they are operating as a year-round shelter. And in fact, the model of the CRIB has been duplicated in several other emergency use shelters that have since been built. But again, one of the things to remember is that, you know, young people very often don't self-identify as homeless.
And hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Today we're talking about the new documentary, The Home Stretch. We'll be back after this.
This is your call on Local Public Radio, KALW. If you have a perspective that you've not yet heard in today's discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered, please join our conversation by calling toll-free 866-798-8255. You can also send an email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Don't forget, this Saturday, San Francisco's official Earth Day celebration coming to the Mission District, 22nd Street, to be more precise, between Mission and Valencia. Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., the event will showcase the best of the green community of the Bay Area. For more information about Earth Day San Francisco, their website is earthdaysf.org. www.homelessfamilies.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with Sylvie Rocab about her new documentary, Love Thy Nature. She believes that reconnecting with nature is key to ensuring our species' future. Doctors are unveiling new findings on the role of nature to sustain and heal the body, and also spending time in nature promotes emotional stability and connectedness. That is tomorrow. On Thursday, we'll be talking about the five-year anniversary of the BP oil disaster in the Gulf. And then Friday, our media roundtable will discuss coverage of what's happening in Kenya. We'll also talk about the Wednesday strike that's happening across the country for minimum wage workers. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about child homelessness. The National Center on Family Homelessness estimates that 1 in 30 children is now homeless, and these numbers just continue to rise. There's a new documentary that focuses on this issue, The Home Stretch. It airs tonight on PBS as part of Independent Lens, and it focuses on the lives and challenges of three homeless teens, Rocky, Casey, and Anthony. And you can look at the trailer at yourcallradio.org and find out when it's airing in your area. Today, I'm joined by Anne DeMare. She's a Chicago-based award-winning director and filmmaker, and Kirsten Kelly is an award-winning documentary film and theater director. Anne and Kirsten produced and directed The Home Stretch. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What goes through your mind when you hear that about 2.5 million kids are homeless in the United States, 1 in 30 children? If you work in education and you're working with homeless children, how is your school dealing with this? How are you dealing with this? And if you work for a homeless organization, we would love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And before the break, you were talking about the fact that so many kids do not identify as homeless.
Yeah, and I just wanted to kind of continue along this idea of, you know, we have so few shelter beds for this population. And a lot of times people ask us, well, where are these young people? Young people are remarkable in their searching for community. They do a lot of couch surfing. They stay over at friends' houses. They can crash somewhere for a week, somewhere else for a night or two. Very often they'll get overnight jobs, or they'll ride the trains in cities like Chicago where there is a public transportation system. They're incredibly resourceful as they kind of search out places to stay. So I just wanted to say that in terms of when we look at that number of there are less than 300 beds available for youth in Chicago, we really are putting a lot of young people in a very precarious situation. And the stress of not knowing where you're going to live night to night, especially on a developing adolescent brain, is enormous, and something that really echoes throughout their life.
Well, let's talk about the three youth that you focused on, because you give them a voice, and I want to make sure we do that on this film, on the show. We meet Rocky, Casey, and Anthony. Why don't we first talk about Rocky? He lives with his teacher, Marie Rivera, who noticed him circling the block with nowhere to go. He says in the film that his dad had a problem with immigration. He was forced to leave the country. His mom remarried quickly, and apparently he just wasn't wanted. What really struck me is when his teacher invited him to stay with her and her family, he called his mom and said, "My teacher said I can stay with her." And the mom didn't say, "Well, no, of course not. You're coming home." Kirsten, was that you? Do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we found is that each young person's story, each of these kids' stories, are really complex and, you know, full of emotional trauma. And especially for a child who is really growing up during this time, you know, and one of the things that floored us was that none of the youth wanted to specifically talk badly about their families. Like, they kept wanting to try for reconciliation. And so they didn't want to say anything. Rocky is such an honorable young man that he would never say anything disparaging about his mother or his father. It was just the situation that they were in. And I think what happens a lot of time, especially with adolescent males, is that, you know, another male comes into the picture and it just doesn't make sense, or that relationship can't work. And so the mother often has to choose. And I think that might have been what happened in that particular situation.
Mm-hmm. What would you add to that, Anne? I mean, you know, you have to wonder, if Rocky's teacher didn't offer him a place to stay, where would he be today?
I think that's the thing, is that, you know, there are so few options, particularly for undocumented kids. I mean, Rocky had no identification at all. Not just that he didn't have the right identification, there was no identification. And so that means that there's no way to even get services if you were to want services. So it's really a challenging situation, particularly for the undocumented population. And as we know, a lot of young people, I mean, Rocky was 5 years old when he was brought into this country. It was not really his decision to come here. And there is nothing, you know, where he ended up, you know, it's one of these things where you were so grateful for people like Maria who are willing to step in. But without that stepping in, I don't know where Rocky would be. I can guarantee you he would not be enrolled in Northeastern Illinois University.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that was the other thing that really struck me, is just the heart of his teacher, Maria Rivera, who has her own family. And acted like Rocky's mother, really. I mean, she took him to Northeastern and said, all right, it's up to you to go into the office and ask them if there are scholarships and services available for undocumented youth. And she was really teaching him a lesson, right? How to go into an office and ask a question, because he's never really done that because of his immigration status. And it was just such a heartwarming moment to watch that.
Yeah, that was one of our, I think, favorite shooting moments. And, you know, Maria is an incredible person. I mean, she works with these kids every single day and can recognize these signs of crisis. But it's often that thing of, what then do you do? The school systems aren't supported enough in a way to get easily to those services. Plus, you've got 32 other kids in your class who are maybe dealing with similar crisis situations. So it's really stressful on the teachers. And Maria did this because she went through a bout of homelessness when she was in high school. And she just saw in Rocky something so special that she knew she had to take that step. Now, Maria could lose her job for this. I mean, this is not, she's not allowed to do this. And you know, we had to be very careful when we were filming, because we needed to protect her, and we always needed to make sure that she was, you know, giving her journey voice in the way that she wanted to. And, you know, I give her so much credit, because she said, you know, if anybody wants to come after me, they are going to get so much feedback and so much bad publicity about it, because this is happening everywhere. Teachers are doing this all the time because there is nothing else to do for these kids. There's nowhere else to go. So it was really a kind of hard situation to navigate through, but I really admire her courage. And now she's become this huge speaker and advocate for these kids in a whole bigger way with the film.
What is she doing today?
She's still a teacher at Curie in the south side of Chicago. And, you know, she's doing drama in English, and she's writing, and she's been on a public speaking circuit with the film, and she's incredible.
Wow. And how is Rocky? He's going to Northeastern in Illinois.
That's right. And he's also working as much as he possibly can. It's not an easy thing to keep, you know, he can't get financial aid. So to go to school, he has to earn that money. So he now has a work permit. So he's working more than full time to just keep in school part time. So right now, if he stays on this track, it's going to take him 8 years to finish school.
Wow. Kirsten Kelly is an award-winning documentary film and theater director. Anne DeMare is a Chicago-based award-winning playwright, director, and filmmaker. Kirsten and Anne are the producers and directors of the documentary The Home Stretch. It airs tonight on PBS, and it focuses on the lives and challenges of three homeless teens, Rocky, Casey, and Anthony, braving Chicago's brutal winters. As someone who grew up in California, I mean, I was just really struck at the crib when these kids were turned away and there was just so much snow and you could just feel the cold. I think it was below 16. So you have to wonder, where do these children go? They're also at the same time dealing with high school pressures and life alone on the streets. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Wherever you're living, you are guaranteed to pass a homeless child. And so if you do, what goes through your mind? Have you ever talked to a homeless child, asked them questions? If you work in the schools, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on these growing numbers? 1 in 30 kids is now homeless in the United States. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go to our next caller, Anonymous. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi. I just want to express appreciation for your show, because until listening to this morning, I didn't really realize this was my story. I'm a woman in my 50s, and I'm still dealing with this. I grew up in a home with a divorced mom and a younger sister, took care of my sister when we were children, and was just not wanted. I was told from the time I was 5, you know, there was everything wrong with me. I was worthless. There was nothing good about me. And ended up staying at friends' homes. Like, week by week, I'd be at a different friend's home, maybe, you know, a month at a time, and I did not really understand what was going on, just that the insecurity you mentioned of not knowing where you'll be, but I didn't think of it as homelessness. I just thought of it as my friend's family wants me. They would give me my own bed, treat me as one of their children, but I don't recall them ever speaking with my mother to discuss that I would be staying with them. They just were that way. And I was in foster care when I got to be a teen, and have been self-supporting and living in California since I was 17. But I have to say, I am still dealing with it to this day. And when you grow up a little child, hearing that you are worthless and realizing when you're about 5 years old, it's up to me if I exist or not, should I still be here? I try to mask it, but I don't think I've ever gotten help, and I try to deal with it as best I can and try to, you know, get along, but it's reverberated throughout my whole life, and all I can say is it probably, I don't know if it's too late for me, but what you're doing, if you can help any of these young people not to have to live the rest of their life like that, just feeling you're not worth enough. I even have a master's degree. I mean, I dropped out of high school. I've done everything that I could do to try to, you know, be a worthwhile person in this world, but still that's always with you, the being unwanted. And so I commend you so much for what you are doing for these young people, and I just wish there was a way you could help all the young people out on the street going through this. So I thank you for your program and for your work.
Wow, well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Kirsten, do you want to address that? And just, I mean, this is pretty common, what we just heard from our last caller.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and we met kids as young as your caller was talking about in her life. Like, we were in preschools and, you know, just the stress and the chaos and the trauma, it affects you for the rest of your life, and it affects your brain chemistry. It affects, you know, how you deal with your relationships through your life. And so, you know, having this instability at such a young age really does affect every single thing in your life. And, you know, I really applaud the people who are willing to share their stories, but also to be able to ask for help or ask for to find people to talk to and find a community that supports you. And I think that's one of the things we realized, was that this was not just a film about homelessness, but a film about, you know, finding community. Like, nobody wants to be isolated. And so, you know, in amongst everything, this is not just about finding people shelter or finding people a bed. This is about supporting kids at these very vulnerable times in their lives with a community. I mean, one of the things we learned from almost everybody we met along this journey was that the single most important thing that makes a difference in these young people's lives of whether they can successfully move towards a future is a consistent, stable adult in their life.
Right.
Whether that's a teacher, a mentor, a foster parent, you know, anybody who is willing to commit to consistently keep track of that kid, whatever, it doesn't mean you have to take them into your home, but it means you stay with them. And that support, whether it's a teacher or coach, makes the world of difference. The fact that you know that somebody thinks you're full of worth and that they think that you're worth following and supporting and cheering on and teaching and mentoring, I mean, that makes such the world of difference in these people's young people's mm-hmm. journeys.
And what would you add to that?
Just that, you know, one of the things that is so that I constantly remember when I look back is just the potential of all of these young people. You know, we it's such an incredible wealth of humanity that we are letting slip through our fingers sometimes as a society. And we really need to recognize that all of these young people have so much to offer us. One of my favorite moments in the film is towards the end of the film when Maria is talking about the shift in her own mind when she realized what Rocky was giving her back. Mm. And I think that all of these young people have so much potential to give us more than we could ever give them. And I think that's just so important. And as the caller just, you know, emphasized, you know, it's just wrong that young people grow up and feel worthless. It's just wrong for everybody. It's wrong for the kid. It's wrong for the society they live in. It's just, you know, we need to recognize the possibilities that are slipping through our fingers when we don't support these children.
Well, to the woman who just called, thank you again so much for calling in and sharing your story. Let's go next to John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rose and guests. This is really a disturbing program. Mm. I didn't realize the problem was this bad. And it's disturbing not just for the stories that are being told, but also because we are living in the wealthiest country in the world, and maybe of all time. I would like to know if your guests could provide some context for the problem. I've watched over the years many programs on the Depression, and it didn't seem like child homelessness was emphasized in those programs. Could your guests comment on the problem of child homelessness during the Depression and the progression of child homelessness over the years?
Thank you. Who wants to take that one?
We're both kind of pointing the finger at each other over the table. Unfortunately, I'm not an expert historically to be able to talk about it. I can share something kind of personal, which is that my mother's father left home extremely young in Missouri. He was 10 years old when he left home and managed to make a living doing farm work and eventually opened his own restaurant. But I don't think people thought about it that way. There was also just in terms of child homelessness, I think that it's an issue that's probably always been there. But I don't have, unfortunately, I don't have numbers or statistics that I can satisfy John with in terms of historical context. But I do think that, you know, how a society supports their children and the opportunities they provide for them is one of the gauges of whether or not we're doing a good job as a society. And I think the overwhelming feeling right now that we have after making this film is that we can do better. Mm. And just to reference what your earlier caller said, we do actually know how to deal with this crisis. We have amazing people working on the ground, not only in the schools and in the youth service organizations, but in homeless coalitions and activists locally and federally. So I think that, you know, our hope is that by opening the door to this and giving more attention, we can really look at the crisis as it is in front of us. and find ways to respond individually, community-wise, and as a whole country.
Well, John, thank you for calling. I hope you can tune in next Tuesday because we'll be joined by Robert Putnam, who's out with a new book called Our Kids, The American Dream in Crisis. And he tells stories of rich and poor kids from cities and suburbs across the country. And he speaks to this issue about how we got here and why this issue is exploding. So I hope you can join us for that. Thank you for calling, John. Let's go to our next caller, Anonymous. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi there. I had a situation in my household. I took in a teen. He was 14 going on 15. He lived with me for about 11 months. He had his own ideas about the way he thought life should be. I have three other kids that were all still in the house with me. Actually, my eldest was out of the house, but I had two other kids that were 4 years and 7 years ahead of him. And there's a certain way that you parent, you know, your children. And what I was trying to provide for this young man was a stable environment so that he could go to school, study, and not worry about where his next meal was coming from, where he was going to lay his head. And I wasn't doing it to get a pat on the back. I really felt like I wanted to give him an opportunity. He squandered it in a huge way. For 11 months solid, he did the opposite of what I asked. He chose kind of to, well, we took him to get medicine for his ADD, which he refused to take, and then he lied, and then he cut school, and he just wasn't, he was given the opportunity, but it wasn't right for him to choose that at the time. And I couldn't allow him to do that in my household, especially in front. I mean, I wouldn't have allowed my own children to get away with that stuff. So he had underlying issues, lots of emotional ones. And I mean, how I'm assuming that that must be a huge component to, you know, this big problem that's being addressed today. And I want to commend all of y'all for doing what you do and putting the focus on it.
Do you know where he is now?
He's back with his mom. In fact, when I, you know, said he couldn't live with me anymore, he and his mom were able to, over that 11-month period that he lived with me, kind of mend their fence a little bit, and they were able to get along a little bit better. See, she was not willing to take care of him because he was so oppositional, argumentative, didn't get along with her family, and the dad was the one who was a former friend of mine from many, many years ago. He was running around with his kid in a homeless situation. He was homeless. The son was homeless then because the mom couldn't deal.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. And Anne, as we've been saying, everyone has a story, and all of these stories have so many layers.
Definitely. I mean, I think that you never know that the amount of trauma and the amount of psychological and emotional pain that a young person has had to endure. It's, you know, Kirsten and I know we felt at times like we're not social workers. We really had, were fortunate enough to have teachers and counselors and social workers we could turn to help us navigate sometimes with the young people. And, you know, in terms of the caller that just called in, those 11 months may have been crucial to this young man being able to go back with his mother and mend some kind of fence. It isn't easy to look at the kind of damage that we have in some of our young people. And, you know, I'll just say that we need to give young people more than one chance. And that's one of the reasons why it's so important that we support transitional living homes and we support some of the youth services that really understand that, so that we, you know, at teen living programs where we filmed in Chicago, sometimes young people will go through that system once and they won't be able to kind of stick there. They won't be able to follow the rules, and they'll have to go away and come back again. And sometimes it's the second time that things really move well for them. That was definitely the case with Anthony. He went through teen living programs twice, and he just wasn't, he didn't have the trust and the faith and in the system in the beginning to make it work for him. And as we see in the film, when he came back the second time, he really pushed through. I mean, he's an astonishing young man in his drive and in his ability to change his life. So I just want to say that when we think about young people who sometimes we may think that they let us down and that they squander the opportunity we give them, just that we need to be patient sometimes.
Well, and I would just add that, you know, I really commend the caller for sharing that, because we need more people to sort of take that risk and give these kids a chance. And it's not always easy. I mean, one of the things I think that surprised both Anne and I in the sort of over 5 years of relationship with these kids is that, you know, they really know how to survive and operate when things are going badly, because that's what they're used to. Often we saw while we were filming when things started to go well, or like when they got to graduation and made this incredible goal, or when they got a job, that's when things fell apart. They didn't quite have the trust and the foundation to be able to handle something when it started going their way. So it would fall apart, and emotionally they would break apart, and they would begin to start to do really destructive things. And those destructive things sometimes happened in a reaction when they were in a safe place. So I just hear your caller's story, and I wonder if that's part of what was happening. And there's a lot going on in that 14-year-old brain and hormones and trauma and all of this stuff. Mm. But I commend her for really trying.
We have about a minute left. Kirsten, final thoughts from you. As Jenny Friedenbach of the Coalition on Homelessness says, and you both say, these numbers don't have to continue getting worse. There is a real way to tackle this issue.
That's right. I mean, we really see, and we really encourage people to obviously watch the broadcast, but then to reach out in their own community. Call your school. Find out who your homeless liaison is. Ask what they need, whether it be little things that they need on a day-to-day basis or support on a bigger level. That's one concrete step you can do. You can also know the safety net in your own community and start to obviously volunteer, mentor, get involved in little ways, in big ways. There is so much you can do.
And Anne, quick final thoughts?
Just that there's also some amazing things that are going on a federal level and on a policy level. And if you're interested in finding out, you can visit www.homestretchdoc.com and go under the Get Involved tab. And there's information on what we're trying to do on a larger level federally to help this problem.
Anne DeMare and Kirsten Kelly are directors and producers of the new documentary, The Home Stretch. It airs tonight on PBS. I hope you can see it and share it with friends. You can find more information and watch the trailer, yourcallradio.org. And Kirsten, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. How has our relationship with the natural world changed over the years? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with Sylvie Rocab about her new documentary, Love Thy Nature. She believes that reconnecting with nature is key to ensuring our species' future. Doctors are unveiling new findings on the role of nature to sustain and heal the human body. So how can we reconnect with nature? And what is your relationship with the natural world? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Knock Wynn produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco. Coming up next, World Have Your Say from the BBC. Local Public Radio, KALW, is a media sponsor for San Francisco's official Earth Day celebration, taking place this Saturday, April the 18th, from 10 a.m. until 7 in the evening in the Mission District on 22nd Street between Mission and Valencia. The event will showcase the best of the green community of the Bay Area, including DIY workshops, a kids' green zone or a green kids' zone, organic food and drink, and much more. More information on Earth Day this Saturday here in the city at earthdaysf.org. It's 11 o'clock. World Have Your Say from the BBC is next. It was recorded earlier today for broadcast at this time.
Hello, I'm Chloe Tilley. Welcome to World Have Your Say. You're sharing your ideas about whether a woman makes the best leader.
Her challenge is going to be the fact that she is a woman. And unfortunately, women always have to do everything harder, stronger, even dancing. You know, we have to do it backwards and in heels. So that's going to be her issue.
So Hillary Clinton is running to become the first female president of the US. But does it matter whether a man or a woman leads a country? Does it undermine women to view them that way? Or does a woman bring a different perspective to the role? Then we'll bring you a conversation between young British students ahead of the general election here in a few weeks' time. Plus, we'll pick up on the most read story on the BBC website. Male suicide claims thousands of lives every year. It's the single biggest cause of death for men under the age of 50 here in Britain. We'll hear from men who've attempted to take their own lives.